And once again, good morning here on the mighty 690 KGGF. Connor Harbutt here with you once again today on this Wednesday morning. It is now time for Greenside Up. I've got a couple of people in here from the K-State Extension Office, James Coover and Jesse Gilmore joining me here today. Guys, good morning. How are you guys?
Pretty good. Staying warm.
Absolutely. So, of course, we've got some events to talk about here first and foremost. So, Jesse, I guess we'll go ahead and start with you today.
Sure. So, I've got a couple of events to talk about. The first is that the K-State Garden Hour is starting its 2022 schedule on January 5th. You can find registration for that on our KSRE webpage for Horticulture and Natural Resources. The topic for January 5th is going to be selecting superior vegetable varieties for the state of Kansas. Obviously, certain varieties are going to have different characteristics, and these varieties that Rebecca is going to talk about during the webinar are better grown in Kansas than in other places, specifically because of our environments. The other thing that I wanted to touch on is FSMA training. FSMA is the Food Safety Modernization Act, and the University of Missouri and Kansas State University are putting on a joint training on January 25th and 27th. It's a two-day training online from 1 to 5. FSMA is a good idea to learn more about if you are selling commercial produce. There are certain requirements for FSMA training if you sell over a certain dollar amount of produce in a year. It's not required if you sell under, but obviously you want your food to be as safe as possible for the people you sell it to, so it is worth going through that training. That training is free. If you want to sign up, you can contact our office and I can get you more information on that.
Absolutely. And so, James, what kind of events do you guys have coming up?
We've got a lot of events coming up in January and February. So the first one I'm going to talk about is the Grain Marketing Risk Management Workshop. And that'll be on January the 17th in Erie. And we're going to cover in that workshop basically effective corn marketing, talking about like basically inputs, options, various market analysis. We're going to kind of look at what we're expecting the markets next year to be and how to actually make a marketing strategy. And so really pretty much every farmer is going to be, you know, they have to be involved, like they're businessmen really. Mm-hmm. And so like every farmer could use this workshop in some way. It's going to be directed towards corn marketing, but really any grain commodity would fit well within this. So January 17th at the Erie, and this it's going to be an important workshop, and so I'm happy we've got one in this area. Another one is the Risk Management Skills for Kansas Women in Agriculture. It's by the Kansas Women in Agriculture. It's not specifically for women, even though that's who's putting it on. But it's basically a five-class series that we're going to be talking about risk management. And so the first one is on January the 12th. People need to sign up here in the next couple of weeks because they're going to get a lot of materials and stuff printed off. So, you know, that is something that's definitely coming up. It was wildly successful last time they had one of these programs, and I suspect that this year is going to be a good one too. So we have a corn school that will be in Parsons on January the 18th. We have a soybean school that will be in Parsons on February 1st. We also have like a regenerative agriculture, and that will be in McCune on February the 8th. And you know, the rest of the month, we actually have some other events coming up too. So we have a lot of stuff coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, of course, we've got a few topics to talk about here today. So, Jesse, we'll go ahead and start with you. What kind of stuff would you like to share?
Sure. So I'm going to talk a little bit today about the Census of Agriculture that's coming up next year. And then a little later, we'll talk a little bit about poinsettias because that's a pretty festive, timely topic. But the reason I wanted to start with the Census of Agriculture is that to my knowledge, and I might be wrong about this, not a ton of people know that a census of agriculture is done every 5 years by the USDA. The first one was back in the 1860s, and up until 1997, it was actually done by the U.S. Census Bureau. So the Census Bureau was responsible for taking population censuses, but they were also responsible for tracking farms and farm production in the United States. Until the responsibility for that passed to the USDA and the National Agricultural Statistics Service, or NASS, who is the primary organization and governmental department responsible for doing the census. And basically what the census does is it tallies at the state, at the national, and even down to the county level, the number of producers who are commercially selling food in the United States. And that could be produce, like fruits or vegetables. It could be specialty plants, like herbs, or honey or dairy. Could be livestock, could be field crops. There's a lot of different ways to kind of organize those particular groups. But a lot of people use the data collected by the Census of Agriculture. I know that when I was in grad school, it was very helpful for seeing farmer demographics and kind of tracking how the demographics of farmers have changed over the last 100 or so years. As an extension agent, I think it's particularly helpful in developing programs because, let's say, for example, I wanted to do a program on nut production. So walnuts, pecans, hazelnuts, other types of nuts. I could get a look at county level data and see which counties have nut producers that I could reach out to if I knew them. Obviously, data that you provide to the census is required to be confidential by law. So that data can't be connected back to you directly. But if I wanted to, you know, put a feeler out there for nut producers. You can also, if you are in production and are looking to get into other markets, and this is probably more true for specialty plants than it is for field crops or livestock, but you could look and see what production of particular crops that you might be interested in growing is already in your area and what might be more marketable because of a lack of that product. So if I go on and I look at hazelnut production, for example, I would see that there are only 10 producers across the entire state in 5 different counties that commercially grow and sell hazelnuts. So that might be something worth getting into. But stuff like that. The USDA also uses the data to determine what services are needed in particular areas, for example, marketing forecasts, crop insurance, farm service agency loans, things like that. So I would definitely encourage people, if you commercially grow food, to sign up to respond to the Census of Agriculture. That's not going to happen until next year, but it is possible to sign up to respond to that now. If you do have any other questions about the Census of Agriculture, you can either call our office. Doug Bounds is the name of our NASS state liaison. He works in Topeka. He would also be worth reaching out to if you have any other questions about the Census of Agriculture and how it's used.
All right, awesome. And so, of course, you also mentioned as well poinsettias. It's about this time.
Yep.
Kind of a winter staple, if you would, but we got a little bit of info on that today.
Yeah, so poinsettias are, I want to say, and I think I'm correct about this, the most sold individual plant species in the United States every year. Last year, there were more than 35 million poinsettia plants sold across the U.S. They are what people think of as poinsettia flowers, the really bright red part of the plant. Those are actually modified leaves. The flowers are right in the center of those red leaves, and they are, the flowers themselves are pretty not noticeable really compared to the bright red or cream or white leaves. They are breeding more colors into poinsettias, whereas you might have only been able to traditionally get red poinsettias. There's a lot of different colors now. Poinsettias are very interesting in that they need a very specific day-night cycle. So some plants that you bring into your house and use as houseplants, you might put supplemental light on them. For poinsettias, that is actually a bad idea because it will not fully develop its color without very specific lengths of sunlight and no sunlight. And in some cases, if your poinsettia is near a window that has street light coming into it, that will interrupt its color development, even if it's super weak light. So it needs periods of full darkness, too. Luckily, for most poinsettias that you can buy in garden centers or home improvement stores, they have already gone through that process of development in the greenhouse where they were grown. So that day-night cycle that you would need to worry about. You would only need to worry about that if you're planning on growing them over multiple years. A lot of people I know just grow poinsettias for the holiday season and then throw them out. You can actually grow them year-round if you're diligent about watering. Poinsettias are native to Mexico, so they do suffer from a little bit of cold damage, but during the summer months, you can put them out into your landscape and they should be fine. You would need to make sure that you are diligent with watering because they can suffer from drought pretty badly. And every 2 weeks, if you put the pot that it's in into the ground in a hole, you would need to rotate it every 2 weeks to basically break off any new roots that have grown through the bottom of the pot. But you would bring it in around September 1st if you were to grow it outside during the year, and probably repot it again because it would likely get too big for its pot after the year that it's grown in your house. And there is a reputation for poinsettias that they are deadly. That is actually not true. Poinsettias are a member of the spurge family. And all spurges are going to exude a milky white sap when the plant tissue is damaged. That sap has varying levels of toxicity depending on what species of spurge you're eating. I would not recommend eating any spurge. But some species of spurge are deadly when consumed. Poinsettias are not. Even when tested, they can't get a lethal dose of the toxins in the sap when over a pound of poinsettias is eaten. And I don't think anyone is going to be eating over a pound of poinsettia foliage. Urban myth originated when there was a child who was found dead next to a poinsettia plant, and they assumed that he had consumed the poinsettia plant because spurges were known to be deadly at the time. And so there was a long-held belief that poinsettias are deadly. Now, I absolutely would not recommend eating them. Like with most spurges, they are going to cause some gastrointestinal symptoms that you don't really want to deal with, but they are not going to kill you. It is always a good idea to keep the plants away from places where small children or pets might frequent, and one thing to note about spurges is that they will trigger an allergic reaction in anyone with a latex allergy. So those allergic reactions can be kind of severe, so it is a good idea to know beforehand if you have a latex allergy before buying them.
Yeah, just exercise caution when dealing with poinsettia. So once again, thank you so much for the info. We're going to go ahead and take a short break. We'll come back with news, and then we'll have Matt Jordan stop by. And then after that, we'll come back and talk with James a little bit. He'll have some info for us as well as we continue Greenside Up here today. But once again, thank you so much, Jesse. We'll be back with Fox News here in a few minutes. Mighty 690 KGGF. And back here once again on the Mighty 690 KGGF in this 8 o'clock hour. Hopefully you're having a wonderful Wednesday. It's time to return to Greenside Up. Back here now with James Coover. James, once again, good morning. And as I understand it, we've got some things to talk about today. Let's go ahead and start with a question. What is basis in commodity markets? That's just kind of what we're talking about today.
Yeah, so I wanted to kind of highlight basically some market terms that economists, they throw around all the time. They might talk about it on the radio, but people often don't know what those terms are, at least if they're not within the field itself. And so brief overviews of what some of this stuff, I'm not an economist myself, so I'm not going to go deep into it, just a general understanding. And so a basis in a market is the difference between a cash price that would be paid at a location and for commodity markets, what is the Chicago Board of Trade future price? And so, you know, If currently there are $7.50, that would be on the wheat market futures on the Chicago board, and there's $7 that would be paid at Columbus, for instance, there'd be a 50-cent basis between those two. And it is possible that actually the local prices are even higher than the Chicago board as well, which would also be, you know, the difference in the basis. The board is literally just a reference point that we use for all the other locations. And so, you know, just because a future says it's this dollars, this many cents, that's not actually the quantity of money that farmers are going to get when they take their stuff to the elevator. It doesn't work like that. It's not universal across the entire country here. And so, you know, just like gas prices at the pump are different, that's the same thing. And so a strong or narrow basis, a strong or narrow basis, that's the kind of terms what they use, is that's when the numbers are close together. And the markets is basically a signaling that the markets are wanting that grain. There's some place to go with it, whether it's being, you know, feeding it to animals or food stock grain, or whether it's being exported, like a lot of our wheat and soybeans and stuff. And so it's really a strong basis means that there's a lot of movement within the market. A weak basis or a wide basis, it means the opposite of that. Really, you know, there's not a whole lot of places for some of that grains to go to. There's less grain that is needed. Often not, it means, you know, farmers are going to kind of respond to that by either keeping back their grain or keeping it within storage, just because they're not getting as good prices as they could have got it. But however, they also have to keep in mind that if the market is higher, even though the basis is higher, there still might be some price advantage to it than it was, you know, before. And so basis is dependent upon location. And so when they're talking about basis, they might say, the basis at, you know, Garden City is this. The basis at Salina is this. The basis at Columbus. And the reason why those numbers are different is because, you know, the Chicago Board of Trade is the reference point. What they're going to get there, the elevator, is a widening basis between what those places are. So that's what the basis is. The reason why it could be different has a lot of different factors. And so the distance between the elevator to the port, for instance, you know, a lot of this stuff is transported on barges. It goes down the Mississippi River or something like that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the Mississippi freezes up north. You know, there's a lot of different things that changes basis. It has a lot to do with harvest, too. I mean, if we're expecting a higher than normal harvest and there's literally nowhere for that grain to go, we don't have all the storage in this country that we need to support a full, an oversized harvest. So there really is nowhere for that grain to be put. There might be a weaker basis because they cannot handle it all.
Yes.
You know, also, you have to keep in mind that we use a lot of grain in this country. And so the distance between the crushing plants, for instance, there's a lot of crushing plants for soybean, canola, our oil crops are crushed. And that's, a lot of those are in western Kansas. And so around here, sometimes we have a weaker basis on some of those things like soybeans because it costs so much to transport it up there. Hopefully, they're talking about opening up a new crushing plant in Cherryville, right here in Montgomery mm-hmm. County. So, you know, we're hoping that maybe that basis will help us out a little
bit. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. There's some place for our soybeans to go to. It's kind of a big thing in that they're talking about the farmers around here. So, well, we'll see what happens with that. Of course, also the feedlots, too, in western Kansas. That, a lot of our corn goes to those feedlots and the various other, maybe like the chicken industries down in Missouri and Oklahoma and in Arkansas. And so, you know, the feedlots, of course, they kind of have their own basis. I mean, their own pool of grain, too. So there's a lot of little bubbles and a lot of little factors about where the stuff is going to go. And it affects it. Honestly, Southeast Kansas doesn't always have the best basis. We don't have huge industries here. We don't have the crushing plants. And we're kind of far away from all the barges. So, you know, hopefully over time that crushing plant's going to help us out, at least with soybeans anyway. So, you know, also you got to keep in mind that the cash basis does not run at the same speed as the Chicago Board of Trade. That's kind of like the stock market, you know, mm-hmm. like it's going up and down all over the place. The elevators, I mean, that's how much that they're willing to pay for their cash basis. It's kind of like the oil I was talking about oil prices earlier. It's like the price you pay at the pump. Mm-hmm. You know, really fast. That does not mean the price of the pump is going to drop at the same speed.
Yes.
You know, if they're making money, they're going to keep those prices high. So it takes a little time for things to work out of the system. So, you know, when economists, they talk about basis, they also talk about signals in the market from the basis. Mm-hmm. And so they use the idea that there's widening or narrowing within the basis between location to location as a response that the market is responding. It's you know, it's expecting a higher than the normal harvest. So that basis is widening. I mean, they're expecting some odd export things. You know, right now wheat's going nuts, actually. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's some confusion with not a lot of it's being exported, too. And so, for instance, they're using the signals as a basis for wheat and to try to predict of what's all going on with the export in the internal markets with that. And so, those locations are going to differ. And so we're going to have a very different basis here in Kansas than they are a completely different kind of wheat even on the East Coast. So, you know, when the economists talk about basis and talk about signals of basis, that is what they're talking about. It's literally the cash price that you're getting in response and looking at the difference between the Chicago Board of Commodity Trades. And so, you know, those terms are important into the actual understanding what the jargon the economists use. Another thing that economists often use is options. Mm-hmm. They talk about options within the market, kind of a completely different, separate thing.
Yeah.
And so, but options are also using the futures boards. I'm not an economist. I don't understand all the terms that they use, or how to use them. But when they're talking about, for instance, a put, or they put a call. Well, a put or a call, and so is basically, it's an obligation that if you have a contract, an option contract, you have an obligation. Or, it's a choice, but not an obligation. And so mm-hmm. you don't have to actually use those contracts that you've purchased, a put or a call contract. And a put basically means a buy, and, you know, a call basically means a sell. I don't know why they use these terms. That's just a simple idea of what it is. And then the buyer will have to, of course, use some sort of premium to get these contracts. For the most part, farmers, they're just going to be buying these things. And so, you know, they're going to be doing a lot of buying of options rather than selling. Selling is done by brokers, pretty much, mm-hmm. Because they're trying to collect premiums. And so, you know, it's a way for farmers basically to hedge their risk, which is another term called hedging. You know, they're hedging, mm-hmm. which is kind of a blanket term, and options is one of them that they use within that term. And so, you know, options, they kind of offer a form of insurance within the market. It's right now the markets, you know, they can go up or down. In the last couple of years, they've gone crazy up and down on all sorts of different external factors. And so it can really make a big difference when it comes to really exactly what, I mean, farmers, that's what they're doing. They're creating commodities and their prices are not protected. And so one way of doing that is to having options within the market. And you have to really understand what that means for them to use those options, which is kind of the reason why I'm saying all this is to come back down to what we're doing on the Risk Grain Marketing Workshop. Mm-hmm. And so on January 17th in Erie, that Risk Grain Market Workshop, those are the kind of things and the terms that we're going to be talking about. Risk management, actually using the futures and all the basis and all that stuff, and how to create a marketing plan to use all that stuff to protect their prices. It's not about making more money. It's about protecting the mm-hmm. money that they should be made, because, you know, to actually make money in the stock market, I mean, those, you know, the Wall Street guys, all that, they're the ones trying to make money off the Wall Street in all the stock market. Farmers are just trying to protect the money yes. that they should be making. And so, you know, they're going to talk about strategies. I'm talking about, you know, what farmers can need to do, and it can be done with pretty much any commodity. We're going to talk about corn in that workshop, but it doesn't matter. Actually, even cattle, for instance, which kind of the same terms, but completely different idea system when it comes to cattle and livestock. But really, market terms are market terms. Mm-hmm. So that will be on January 17th in Erie, 9:30 to 2:30. And, you know, I really impress upon really any farmer that sells grain, honestly, any farmer that sells grain, which is every farmer almost, yeah. that, you know, this workshop applies to them. So,
yeah, absolutely. I would definitely implore anybody in our area who is listening right now to get involved with that. Always a lot of great events being provided by the K-State Extension Office. And again, that is January 17th for that particular one.
And kind of to connect with that, so that's kind of a one-day class workshop event. Mm-hmm. And so the risk management skills for women in agriculture, that's actually kind of having to do a lot of the same things. And so we're going to be talking about protecting ourselves within the market. So enterprise budgeting, crop insurance, crop marketing, which is actually the exact thing that we were just talking about, and also the Farm Bill programs, so ARC and PLC. Those are all blankets within the same area to help protect farmers with these different changes in markets. And so, you know, those will be, we're going to have two locations. We'll have a five-class series in two different locations. One will be in Girard, and one will be Independence. And so if you're interested in sort of like a night class sort of series to cover a lot of these things, even a broader topic within that, you know, this risk management skills is going to be a fantastic way to handle that too. And so we'll begin on January 12th. If you're interested in signing up, please do so too. Soon. We need to have most of the registrations done by probably January the 3rd because they got to get all that stuff printed. Mm-hmm. So, you know, please let me know if you're interested. We've got a lot of market stuff coming up here soon.
Absolutely. Make sure you make your plans by, once again, January 3rd. So, James, so much. Once again, thank you so much, I guess I should say, for stopping by. A lot of terms flying around here, but it is important to know how to protect yourself, protect that money that you should be making. But again, a lot of great information here today. So that'll be it for Great Greenside Up here with James and, of course, Jesse a little bit earlier today. We'll see him back on next Wednesday. But again, thank you so much for stopping by.
Yep, thank you.
So we'll go ahead and move on to a weather forecast here. We got Fox News coming up in about, let's say, about 7 or 8 minutes. But when we come back, it'll be time for Open Line. Got a question for you today, our Wilson Medical Center poll question of the day I think you might like. So we'll be back here in just a little bit with Open Line. You're on the Mighty 690 KGF.